listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Canadian Philosophy Show. My name is Aaron Wang, and I will be your main host. I am joined by Brandon Brownlee, a fourth-year student, philosophy student at Vancouver Island University, and Kira Tianen, who is a third-year UBC philosophy student. Today, the topic that I have chosen is superintelligence. What is it, and what are some of the ethical issues that are caused by that idea? At this point in time, most of our listeners will be aware there's this thing called ChatGPT, and it is a really, really fun chatbot system that is powered by something called a large language model. We're not going to be talking about any of that today, but how that relates is that the company that is developing the system, which is called OpenAI, the main point here is to consider artificial intelligence, how it relates to society, and more specifically, what kinds of intelligence are we creating them? What kinds of intelligence are we creating? What systems do those intelligences occupy? And then from a media theory or a technology theory perspective, how does that have more effects for society? So those are a lot of questions. I'm going to dig a little bit into this paper, which is written by an author named Nick Bostrom. He's from Oxford University in the philosophy faculty, and this is from his slightly revised version of a paper that he published in Cognitive, Emotive, and Ethical Aspects of Decision-Making in Humans and in Artificial Intelligence for the Institute of Advanced Studies in Systems Research and Cybernetics in 2003. So I'll start off by reading part of the introduction. A superintelligence is any intellect that is vastly outperforms the best human brains in practically every field, including scientific creativity, general wisdom, and social skills. This definition leaves open how the superintelligence is implemented. It could be in a digital computer, an ensemble of networked computers, cultural cortical tissue, or something else. On this definition, Deep Blue is not a superintelligence. For reference for the listeners, Deep Blue was a very powerful computer created to play chess by a company called IBM a long, long time ago. It was one of the very first computer systems that was able to beat the very, very best chess grandmasters in the world. So this was an example of a computer system outperforming the very, very best humans in that field. So on this definition, Deep Blue is not a superintelligence, since it is only smart within one narrow domain, chess. And even there, it is not vastly superior to the best humans. Entities such as corporations or the scientific community are not superintelligences either. Although they can perform a number of intellectual feats of which no individual human is capable, they are not sufficiently integrated to count as intellects. And there are many fields in which they perform much worse than single humans. For example, you cannot have a real-time conversation with the scientific community, in quotation marks. While the possibility of domain-specific superintelligences is also worth exploring, this paper focuses on issues arising from the prospect of general superintelligence. Space constraints prevent us from attempting anything comprehensive or detailed. A cartoonish sketch of a few selected ideas is the most we can aim for in the following few pages. Several authors have argued there is a substantial chance that superintelligence may be created within a few decades, perhaps as a result of growing hardware performance and increased ability to implement algorithms and architectures similar to those used by human brains. An example of this is neural network technology. An example of that is the large language models that power ChatGPT. Those are not the only examples, nor the best ones, but they are one common example that hopefully our listeners will be aware of. It may turn out to take much longer, reading again from the paper here, but there seems currently to be no good ground for assigning a negligible probability to the hypothesis that superintelligence will be created within the lifespan of some people alive today. So they're basically saying it's likely that superintelligence will be created within our lifetimes. Given the enormity of the consequences of superintelligence, it would make sense to give this prospect some serious consideration, even if one thought there was only a small probability of it happening anytime soon.
I think one of the interesting things about an intelligence or a superintelligence in this sense, I'm interested in this idea of specifically when Bostrom talks about an integrated intellect, because in certain cases we do really think that maybe we're not having real-time conversations with a given group or, you know, even like a period in history when we're reading, say, 17th century philosophy or something. But at the same time, there really is a phenomenon where a reader, say, of 17th century philosophy will be reading, you know, Descartes or something, and there is an experience of engaging with a period, of engaging with the ideas at the time. That doesn't seem to be what Bostrom's talking about, which is fine, but it's just interesting that the kind of intelligence or the kind of intellect that is being talked about needs a certain kind of integration, right? And I would, if I was to think about this more, I would be curious to see what that means specifically. These are, again, kind of quick sketch examples, but when we think about, say, a computer program or a super intelligent machine, I mean, it has parts. What are the criteria for those parts being sufficiently integrated to be considered one singular whole? Whereas when we think of like a computer program or a computer, it has lots of programs on it and we can install things on it. Does that necessarily, because we're loading it up with stuff, does that necessarily mean it's kind of just like thrown together intellects or functionality? I think that we have a different case now with the large language models where they need to be kind of trained in one go. And then you've got that model and then that model talks and whatnot, or we have conversations with it in certain ways. So there's different paradigms of integrity that I think we're dealing with now that the I guess popular imagination is going to have to do some adjusting to. But I guess I'm just saying that I'm interested specifically in the idea of the integrity, but we'll see where we go with that.
It is very interesting, I think, to think about what it will be like to have a intelligence of such a broad quality that has like never been seen or experienced before. I mean, ChatGPT is basically the closest thing. Like as a chatbot system, you can ask it a question, a basic question on basically any subject, and it usually gives you a pretty good answer, which obviously is not something that really any human could duplicate. Like there's no human that has the breadth of knowledge and, or I guess we could say breadth of intellect, although this is not what the author of this paper means by intellect when he says that. So it's that part is very interesting, especially when you think about the breadth of the subject. I think, Brandon, kind of what you were getting into there was a little bit of if you, and this is maybe not the best way to think about it, but I'll finish this thought. When you have a school of philosophy and you study a school of philosophy, that is a way of engaging with a collection of intellects and growing a specific intellect, one person, from engaging with those ideas. And we're not going to talk too much about learning and learning science and the philosophy of learning. There are many philosophies of learning that are super, super fun. Maybe we'll get into that in a future show. But the reason I bring up this point is because when we imagine this system, one of the things that is so incredible about it is its capacity to learn. And with that, I think I'll get a little bit into the second bullet point here about how superintelligence is different. So a prerequisite for having, reading again from the paper, a prerequisite for having a meaningful discussion of superintelligence is the realization that superintelligence is not just another technology, another tool that will add incrementally to human capabilities. Superintelligence is radically different. This point bears emphasizing, for anthropomorphizing superintelligence is a source of misconceptions. So it's not human. It is radically different than human intelligence. And if you want to think about how that is so, an easy example of that is how ChatGPT can answer any question kind of like an encyclopedia can, whereas that's not something that normal humans are able to have that kind of breadth of knowledge. So that's just an easy example, though. There are many, many more differences. Superintelligence may be the last invention humans ever need to make. That's his first bullet point. Given a superintelligence intellectual superiority, it would be much better at doing scientific research and technological development than any human, and possibly better even than all humans taken together. One immediate consequence of this fact is that technological progress in all other fields will be accelerated by the arrival of advanced artificial intelligence. It is likely that any technology that we can currently foresee will be speedily developed by the first superintelligence, no doubt along with many other technologies of which we are yet clueless. The foreseeable technologies that a superintelligence is likely to develop include mature molecular manufacturing, whose applications are wide-ranging. For those of you who aren't aware, there is a technology currently being developed by Google called AlphaFold. This paper was written back in 2002. Recently, AlphaFold, I think May of this year, AlphaFold 3 came out, and it does this... it's not exactly what he's talking about here, but it does do molecular folding, or more specifically, folding of amino acids. So I'm not an expert in that field. I'm probably butchering exactly what it does, but there is a technology called AlphaFold 3, which is an AI power technology, which is potentially very revolutionary in the scientific and technological fields. Just to show you that, like, this change is happening. There are developments being made here. So there are wide-ranging applications. So A, there are very powerful computers that can be developed that could accelerate this superintelligence even more. B, there's potentially advanced weaponry, probably capable of safely disarming a nuclear power. We're not going to get into that today. C, the possibility of space travel and von Neumann probes, which would be self-reproducing interstellar probes. So that's a very interesting possibility to talk about in terms of space travel and the future of the human species, but we're not going to go too far into that today as well. The elimination of aging and disease, that's, I would say, very far-fetched at this point in time to talk about, but it is something that is increasingly interesting as a topic as we get better and better technologies and better understandings of biology and so on. E, fine-grained control of human mood, emotion, and motivation. Now that's very interesting, and I'm very tempted to go into there, but we're just going to keep reading through this list. Uploading neural or subneural scanning of a particular brain and implementation of the same algorithmic structures on a computer in a way that preserves memory and personality. That is something that we actually talked about in a previous show, and from a philosophical standpoint, I took the stance that this would be basically impossible, in the sense that if you have a human mind and that exists in a specific way within a human body, if you were to transfer this human mind into a digital form and host it on a computer, that human mind would not be the same as the human mind that exists in a human body. Now, there is a kind of question of, like, when is it good enough? And I don't really know if you can answer that question. I took the position that it's like, well, imagine you as a human being not being able to see and not being able to hear and not being able to touch or taste or smell. Would you still feel like a human being? It's difficult. And obviously, we can replicate some of that. We have sensors that would allow, if digital intelligence was housed in that, if you had a human mind, you transferred it to digital, like you would be able to give it some amount of mechanical eyes, some amount of mechanical hearing. What about taste and smell, though? What about touch? Those are not things that are as easily replicatable. And there's also the sixth sense of what it feels like to be in your own body. Would it feel if you had a, if it was a digital consciousness, it might feel very different about its existence in a form than it, than we do in our physical bodies with our life experiences. So I think all of those are real problems to that possibility. They're not necessarily problems that can't be overcome, but that's the position I took. And then the, just to finish off the list, there are two more points here. The reanimation of cryogenic patients and fully realistic virtual reality. So these are just kind of some things to catch your eye and to give you, as you said in the beginning of this paper, this is a cartoonish sketch of superintelligence. So those are some ideas. Brandon, would you like to comment on any of that?
I mean, as far as the kind of cartoonish picture, I think it is, just as by way of comment, it is a bit, I suppose, cartoonish. But if we're talking about the kind of phenomenon that Bostrom is really talking about, where we encounter a machine or some kind of being that is able to vastly outperform or I guess cognize in ways that we're not, then I mean I don't see why. I mean, if they are, if something is possible, then I don't see why it couldn't achieve that. Then, but my worry is that, well, if these are cartoonish pictures, and Bostrom is like kind of anticipating the punch here, if they're cartoonish pictures, well, the thing itself that will lead to these things is either realistic or cartoonish, you know? So I guess I want to be open to this, because it does seem to be happening with things like large language models and whatnot. We have a semblance or a kind of glimpse of what this is doing, but at the same time, you know, we have the reality of something like a superintelligence, like ChatGPT. I mean, maybe it's not a superintelligence, but it seems to be our kind of grasp for it, or at least our current instance of it. It's not doing any of these things yet. In fact, it's quite, the things that it is doing are kind of clumsy. I mean, it's great that it can, like a lot of people use it to write code and whatnot. It does that quite well. But there are certain, there are interesting ways that it is, I guess, either frustrating or not doing what we wanted to in a way that we would think that, oh, if it was so intelligent, wouldn't it fix its own problems? Because that's the next point that Bostrom makes in this list. Superintelligence will lead to more advanced superintelligence. It doesn't seem self-reflexive in that way yet. But I mean, maybe I'm harping too much on ChatGPT because it's not really like a superintelligence, but I guess by way of just commenting on this, I mean, in a certain way, this is it. If we have a superintelligence, I don't see why, if these things are possible, they couldn't be achieved by, you know, by superintelligence, I suppose. I'm trying to think of more to say, but other than, like, great, can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. It honestly, it defies human imagination, because it's like, okay, so, and that is honestly the real problem with talking about this, is that we don't have a frame of reference for what superintelligence is, and so playing with the concept in order to understand it is difficult. I think Kira has something she'd like to comment on.
Yeah, I guess like the thing for me is that it reminds me of the conversations between Sartre and Camus, and as well as Friedrich Nietzsche, and where I guess meaning is developed, and that's where I guess where you sit on a philosophical doctrine, whether you can agree that superintelligence is possible, because if you believe that there needs to be some type of a priori ideal to be able to learn, then I don't think ChatGPT or another supercomputer is capable of becoming equivalent to that of a human mind.
Okay, so that's definitely not the author's perspective. The author would say that it's possible for these systems to go far beyond what humans are capable of. So you're saying there are some things that humans are uniquely capable of that would not be possible for...
Yeah, I think that's one of our biggest conversations in philosophy is researching different thinkers and how a person is capable of reflecting and learning. With ChatGPT, it's looking for the right answer. And for humans to learn, we need to have the wrong answer first to be able then to reflect that. And I don't think that a computer will put 1 + 1 = 3 to learn.
Yes, that's an interesting statement. I am resisting the urge to get too much into ChatGPT because as much as I think that will be a fun discussion, I think the point that has been made is an excellent point, and we should move on to talking about superintelligence for today. But maybe we'll have to do another show on more on something like that.
Okay,
so moving on to artificial minds can be easily copied. So I will suspend my disbelief and state that I will consider this as a real possibility. So artificial minds can be easily copied, and I'll just read through the rest of these bullet points. The emergence of superintelligence may be sudden. ChatGPT was very sudden. I'm old enough to remember in university when AlphaGo first came out, which was essentially Deep Blue. What Deep Blue is to chess, AlphaGo is for the game of Go, or sometimes called Go Chess in the West, which is a Asian strategy game, which is played on a 19x19 grid versus an 8x8 grid, which means there are vastly more probabilistic permutations of the board than there are for chess. So there were a lot of people who said, okay, you know, Deep Blue, great, good at chess. Go, there'll never be a computer system that can ever beat the human grandmaster of Go, just because this is too complex of a problem. You can't use the same algorithm to make a computer that will be superhuman at Go than you can for chess, because they're two different problems. So there were a lot of people who wrote it off and basically said, this is an exception. This isn't going to happen for this other subject. But it did happen for this other subject, and they were able to do that through neural network technology, which essentially simulates digitally a network of neurons similar to how the human brain works. It's not exactly how the human brain works, but essentially there in the 1950s, there were some mathematicians who wanted to create a model of and a simulated model of how the human mind worked. And the result of that is the neural network systems. It is very, very complex. There are many, many types of neural networks, and I don't want to display how ignorant I am of all of that topic, so I won't go further into it. Moving on, artificial intellects are potentially autonomous agents. This is a big difference between our current expectations around artificial intelligence technology and where it could go in the future. Because there are very few agents today that are autonomous, that are given free rein over their obligations. There's another work called The Alignment Problem by Brian Christian. And in that book, one of the examples he talks about is essentially the problem of we are putting the world on autopilot. And this may sound a little different than your expectations, but really the definition of artificial intelligence is broad enough to include anything as simple as a spreadsheet with a few special calculations that are automated on it. And that might not sound like an artificial intelligent system, but in the United States, there have been several examples of hiring managers using artificial intelligent systems to screen resumes and to screen applications. And some of those systems have been found to be biased. In fact, they've been shown to be racially biased and otherwise problematic in other forms. And so that's one of the things that Brian Christian brings attention to in his work, is that we need to be very, very careful when we are creating systems that are artificially intelligent, or when we are trying to create systems that model human intelligent behavior, because sometimes when we do that, we tell the computer to do something, and the computer does that thing, but it doesn't do what the human intended. It does what it was programmed to do, and there's a misalignment there between what the technology actually does and what the human intended. And how do we fix those misalignments? So in terms of superintelligence, that's obviously far too complex, but the reason I'm bringing it up is because when you think about what a potentially autonomous agent might be capable of, the other question is, okay, well then, what guardrails do you put around an autonomous agent so that it is able to do what it is needed to do, but also we can prevent it from making the mistakes of human bias at more extreme scales. I do want to let my co-host have an opportunity to talk. So do either of you have a comment before we move further?
I'll go. I agree with that. And I think that's kind of what it leads me back to with this question, with Sartre, where the existence precedes essence. And so that's the same thing when you're looking with computer systems. And that's what can lead to a catastrophe, just like with Sartre and the capability of the eugenics movement. And so I think that's the biggest fear of mine is trying to create an AI intelligence with a certain set of boundaries without adhering to a certain philosophy.
And it is worth pointing out, there are currently a lot of limitations on these technologies, and I don't mean limitations in the regulatory sense, although those are coming. In the United States, they're recently talked about putting together a agency to oversee artificial intelligence, which is something that some people in the field have been calling for quite a little while. There are some big waves in our societies in terms of AI, governance, AI alignment. These are, I think it's now called AI safety, is a new emerging field that's being created to deal with this exact problem. So, I mean, I'm optimistic that we're somewhat ahead of this. The question, how far ahead and where in specific domains, we could talk about all day about that. But I do think that it's very, very good that we are seeing these discussions happening, although maybe we could still use a lot more of them. Okay, I'm just going to read a couple more points here from the article. So artificial intellects need not have human-like motives. And I'm going to read the paragraph attached to this. Humans are rarely willing slaves, but there is nothing implausible about the idea of a superintelligence having its super goal to serve humanity or some particular human, with no desire whatsoever to revolt or to liberate itself. It also seems perfectly possible to have a superintelligence whose sole goal is something completely arbitrary, such as to manufacture as many paperclips as possible, and who would resist with all its might any attempt to alter this goal. For better or worse, artificial intellects need not share our human motivational tendencies. And next, his point is, artificial intellects may not have human-like psyches. The cognitive architecture of an artificial intellect may also be quite unlike that of humans. Artificial intellects may find it easy to guard against some kinds of human error and bias, while at the same time being an increased risk of other kinds of mistakes that need not even the most hapless human would make. Subjectively, the inner conscious life of an artificial intellect, if it has one, may also be quite different from ours. For all these reasons, one should be wary of assuming that the emergence of superintelligence can be predicted by extrapolating the history of other technological breakthroughs, or that the nature and behaviors of artificial intellects would necessarily resemble those of human or other animal minds. All right, so I think I will move on, and I do want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. My name is Aaron Wang, and today I'm joined by Brandon Brownlee and Kira Tianen, and we're talking